Good afternoon, everybody. It is Friday, November 1st, 2019. It's 1:30 p.m. and we're gathered for a special session, general discussion, with the opportunity to meet our new judge, Sarah McLaughlin.
McLaughlin.
Yeah. There we go. I'm like,
the GH, right?
Mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. So just an opportunity just to have that gone. And thanks for making the arrangements and everything. And so we had an opportunity to meet Judge Thusen the other day. Mm-hmm. And but you're one of our own. So it's kind of neat to...
It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Rotating a little bit, feels like.
Have you got to meet our other commissioners?
I think I've met you guys before.
And somewhere along the way. Met.
Yeah.
Although I never had to use you as a lawyer.
I never see you as a prosecutor.
Lawyers, nothing. Judges, on a whole other subject. I don't want to have you
do that. Hopefully those days are far, far behind me. I'm Darren Fowler. Lived here forever. My dad was a city cop for 25 years, and then my son was a city cop for 3.
Oh,
and
that
was a Maricopa County deputy. Yeah, Daniel Fowler is his name. Now, they trained him well. He's doing well down there.
Yeah, they're lucky to have him.
Yeah, but he doesn't like it. He's ready to move somewhere else again.
Farther
and
away.
And I'd say, hey, no, just stay there for a little while.
Yeah.
Yep. Remember how that looks when you look back.
But my generation wanted to go someplace and stay there, so I was born here, went to the Navy, and then came back here. But now young people can't wait to go somewhere else. Like, even if they're very, very satisfied, they are not satisfied. You know, there's more, and there's more, and there's more, and there's more. Well, it reaches a point where you say, you know, this is plenty enough. I don't think they'll ever reach that. I really don't. I think this new generation... is just not going to stop. There's always another horizon. Me, I'm hunky dinky right here.
Yeah.
This town and this within one tank of gas, I can do anything I want. Mm-hmm. And you can't say that in New York City.
Sure.
There is nothing in New York City that was produced in New York City. I don't know what the big hype is.
Wait, I thought that was that salsa commercial.
Oh yeah.
He's connected. New York City.
And the Philly steak sandwich down on the corner wasn't made in New York.
Or Philadelphia.
Assembled in New York.
Assembled.
That's funny. So I grew up around here. I grew up in Southern Oregon. And then right after high school, I went to college. I went to New Hampshire because I thought that sounds very different. It's very far away. Mm-hmm. Then it turns out, if you've ever been there, New Hampshire is the Southern Oregon of the East Coast. Yes. And everyone, everyone who was a native of New Hampshire, they dressed kind of like my dad did, like, at my sister's wedding, he got on his good jeans and tucked in his flannel shirt, and I was like, I could have picked a more similar place. And then after that, I went out of the country for a year, and then I moved back to New York for a year, and then to Boston for law school, and that's what I thought. I thought I wanted adventure. I thought the big cities were interesting, and then, you know, you do that little bit of growing up, and you realize you want family and roots, and all my family's here, so it brought me all the way back. So maybe they'll venture out, but then they'll come back because they realize what they have.
My son-in-law's parents were going to come up here up from Dana Point and Carlsbad down that area. Mm-hmm. And they asked my daughter, he said, well, we're going to go meet your folks. He said, do I need to buy Levi's and a flannel shirt? And I said, Dad wears Levi's and flannel shirts all the time. That's not a requirement.
Okay. I think it just came in style again.
When they got here, they're quite well healed down there with a little 66-foot junket in at Shelter Island. And so they're quite well off. And then I think when they came, the mother arrived by air. And when Pam pulled into our house over here on Prospect, she went, this is where you live?
Would they think you're going to be in a cabin in the woods?
What's the spot?
Yeah, they're like, well, grab a lantern on your way in so we have kerosene at night.
I think she was looking for a double wide with blue tarps on the top.
That's terrible.
Southern Oregon backwoods, blue tarps, and tires. So it is. It's odd what your anticipation is. And I go places in Los Angeles. I went to the convention center last year to a big car show, and we dropped into that convention center. But on the way home, 2 blocks from that convention center, it is an absolute ghetto in Los Angeles. people living in dumpsters, people living between, putting two dumpsters together, make them duplex. It just, it's crazy some of the stuff they have to do. But that's exactly the way they live down there. But now, with this buffer zone around the convention center, mm-hmm. it was gorgeous. Cobblestone streets and all that. Boy, you get just the little parts of America. Now they're mm-hmm. now they're starting to ship them elsewhere. They're taking people out of New York and sending them to Louisiana. They're getting their homeless people out. And
to Louisiana.
We're hearing they're shipping them down to Southern Oregon.
Yeah. Southern Oregon from Portland in Class C motorhomes. Gets rid of Class C motorhomes that are trashing their streets and gets rid of the homeless.
And it's getting our populations up enough for MPOs.
Josephine.
Hopefully we'll count them in the census.
And they're hired as Josephine, Klamath, and Lake. I thought, why not Jackson? Well, Jackson is a metropolitan planning organization, Rogue Valley MPO, mm-hmm. and they have not met their 2025 carbon emissions and pollution thing. So they have vehicle testing in Jackson County, and these motorhomes won't pass the vehicle test. They'll say, well, where'd you get it? Said, I got it from Portland. They gave it to me. So they would have to have an obligation to make it.
Huh.
So they give them the old junkers, and they can go, you can go to Josephine, Klamath, and Lake.
Interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Golly.
And I've heard that from half a dozen people, and I'm still trying to figure out how.
Yeah, who would be doing that?
Huh?
Who would be doing that?
Well, I can tell you, yesterday...
Portland!
No, but who in Portland? Who are these people?
Different social services and different groups. Of where can you go to get help? Where mm-hmm. can you go to... Where is there a place that you can go?
Let me find out where all of our services are. Oh, look, Klamath County has a 100,000 square foot brand new DHS building for 63,000 residents.
Oh, okay.
We have a 60,000 for 83,000 residents. They go, oh, look, all of our resources, we're tapped in Portland. You better go to, here's where they are, and we'll give mm-hmm. you a ticket to get there. And they, you know, Portland, people in Portland don't like homeless any better than it's a big problem mm-hmm. up there. And they go to the governor and say, get rid of these people. Do something.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an easy way to do it. And it feels good because
we should build something.
Because we get a new DHS building, and we think, oh, the employment opportunity, look at this beautiful building.
Mm-hmm.
But you get what comes with it. It's like having a really shiny food dish for stray cats. You get
I hope you brought something happy, too.
I let your Red Robin.
Your time is valuable to us.
So what are your expectations, Judge?
But no, there is an opportunity as far as there's not a lot of times county and courts and the state courts interact. I mean, we kind of share space, but we have separate mm-hmm. functions going in the same building. And I mean, even with district attorney's office, your experience there, it's very interesting for us that the state appoints it's a state electoral for the district attorney, but all the employees and staff are paid for by county.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting thing that at some point the state kind of pushed off on counties to fund, but it's a state function. Mm-hmm. And with the courts, the counties have been put on the task of provide the space, and the courts then pay money or for repairs and various things like that. So I know that with the move of the district attorney's office moving to the lower two floors, the idea is the courts would like to expand out on the top floor. So there's a group mm-hmm. looking at that as an opportunity. But we're also looking at an opportunity for the courts to have a single point of entrance so they can have the secure entrance they've been asking for.
That's what I heard.
And so...
really need. Yeah. Not just asking for, right?
But on the other hand, from the county side, you know, we have a charter that's our founding, or our authority, that says we protect Second Amendment rights, and CCWs can carry in municipal offices. So we have municipal offices in the basement, the first floor, but we're sharing with courts on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And even the ordinance they passed to protect Second Amendment, and Josephine, no county dollars can be spent towards enforcement of carrying a firearm in Josephine County right now. And so how does that work with the courts? And I don't know if it's, you know, if it would hold up in court if that ordinance is challenged or not. But it's a really dichotomy of government with state and local in one building.
Sure.
And so by giving the single point of access can protect the interests of the citizens who want free access to municipal offices while protecting the courts upstairs for the secure entrances they want. So that'll be an interesting process in that. There are some overlap and different things at the level the circuit court is our accountability. There's things that we do that are appealed to circuit mm-hmm. court. Obviously, with elections and stuff, the circuit court helps with that process with its the many appeals to the ballot titles yeah. and different stuff like that. And you guys named some other the other day. I was trying to remember as far as
public records requests get appealed to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We just went through a process. We're kind of under attack with the courier. Mm. Because we updated our policy, but the policy was is that we appointed it to Annette. Even other departments that handle it, it's by our authority that they're handling their own. We could at some point say, no, that's all going to come back and we're going to handle every request. But as elected officials, any decision we make is only appealable to circuit court,
right.
which costs people money. So by having an appointed department head, Annette, handle those.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
They are appealable to the district attorney.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
And so yep. it's we it actually more. Makes
lucky
it
Josh.
Yeah. It, but it should make it, it's a cheaper process. It's a, you know, and so we'll see how that process goes of the interactions. We had for a while our dog control, we have a dog control board that was established yes. in 1967. We just recently updated that policy to actually take it from the yeah. commissioners and have a citizen group become that dog control
oh,
board.
Oh, okay, good.
That's probably since you were last helping us out on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of made with that in mind, though, that whole outline
mm-hmm.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I mean, it's not, I would talk to one of the Klamath County commissioners. They had a case over there where a 12-year-old girl was assigned to be feeding the neighbor's dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had a right, she was supposed to be going in, but the dog attacked her and scalped her.
Wasn't there like multiple dogs in a cage and one of them did that, or was this a different case?
You would know more than me. I just, only one dog ended up on trial of sorts of, but the guy rented the property, he moved away, they determined no criminal intent or something like that, so the civil recourse is the only outcome, mm-hmm. and this girl is deformed for the rest of her life. And the hearing came before the commissioners, and I mean, they were just, one of them, he had a daughter near that age. I mean, they just were all tore up about it and just horrible yeah. situation. And so to me, I like the fact that we are going to have a layer of separation, but that appeals again will go to court. And so that kind of local connection, since we do not have a county court, we've talked at different times of coming up with a county court again, of a municipal for certain things, but there was a while the last 10 years when the city of Grants Pass was looking at creating a municipal court. State law had changed such that it would be financially, it would cost you more to run it than just keeping it with circuit courts. But right now all revenues go to circuit court and there's not really much that come back to the local level. So
that's one of the reasons why our officers don't write very many traffic citations. There's no money on it. There's 80% or 70% goes right to the state. And
oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Huh.
That's a state function, not a, because it goes through the courts and they take their pound of flesh and there's really nothing left for, you know, an officer. I'd love to write a ticket, but I thought, oh, they're going to contest it. Now I got to take time off from my duties on the street to go in and appear in a court and stuff. And then there's really nothing in it for the policing body, you know, for city police or sheriff or anybody. State cops, you know, it's they get the 80%, so they're doing really well up there on the highways. But anytime anything goes to court, we get less, way less. It's not worth it. So I would consider going into a municipal court and just having like a night court thing.
Yeah.
Where you pay the fine and away you go.
Theme song.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, well, they do. You know, they had sitcoms about
that. Oh, yeah. Response.
Yeah.
Didn't we used to have night court? That's what I heard a long time ago.
We had a county court up until the 80s, I think.
80s, okay.
That's when the general circuit court system changed in Oregon, where the states took over the county courts in a lot of the situations. And some maintained them, some didn't. There's not a lot of justices of the peace systems statewide. There's some in different places. Glendale is our closest one.
Mm.
And even they feel like there's more and more being taken away from them. And I don't know. It's an interesting dichotomy. But, you know, one of the things you said when you got sworn in about fighting for justice is something I really respect. Because with my background as a parole officer, when I saw somebody come in with a conviction that I felt that it was like, gosh, how was this justice? you know, that you got here kind of thing in the circumstance? And I'd have somebody who was so immersed in criminality and they'd get chance after chance and just deal after deal after deal. And this person comes in on their first thing and the book is just thrown at them kind of thing. And, and or you'd have a violation and there'd be stipulations. It's like, challenge it if you want. I said, I am obligated to file the report. But I want the system to work. I want, you know, and I work just as closely with the defense attorneys as I did with the prosecutors on probation violation cases because I always wanted to believe in the justice system and wanting to know that if they're there, it was the right thing because they're there. And not because it was easy for the attorney just to take a deal or they didn't want to do this and that. You actually want it to be that it's the right thing. And I believe in restorative justice. I think there's something too that if you go and you make amends that it's okay. So that's why I love the drug court concept or the mental health concept that you can do something to have that taken off your record. And so I appreciated, I mean, that's my perspective on justice. I appreciated that you guys did that. It used to be that, I remember a police officer telling me that they've taken a lot out of the hands of police officers in the discernment or the discretion they can operate in the field. They said, no, your job is to refer everything, and then the courts are supposed to work it out. And when I was talking to the head of the department on Center for Policing Excellence up at DPSST, he said, yeah, we do a lot these days that is lawful, but the outcome is awful. And we've lost humanity in the process of the justice system. And for instance, a police officer who stopped a few years ago just kind of decided that she didn't like where she saw things going in the community with justice. She said she came across a kid who, yeah, wasn't up to any good, but she opted in seeing this kid's pain and what was going on to give them a ride home, and then got written up for not filing it, the MIP or the letter of the law or something like that. Well, what happened to that kid having now faith in a law enforcement officer that they can seek him for help or something else like that, that relationship side of mentoring and building
part
up
of community policing.
And that discernment has lost. And so I had some teachers talking to me about there's a whole generation in their early 20s right now that don't trust cops. This whole mentality of us versus them and just this. And I think we've lost something in that. I understand this function versus this function versus this function, but I was a kid, any adult that told you to knock off what you were doing, you listened to, and you would get in trouble when you got home because the word would get to your parents before you got there, and there's not that anymore. It's just, let's go right to the justice system, which, of course, you guys are overburdened.
Yes. A lot of that.
So we've put school outreach officers in all of this county junior high schools. And that intent is to intervene before they get to delinquency and to be kind of working as case managers in the schools, working with referrals to try to intervene before they get to that point that they're in a juvenile delinquency situation. And so a preventative measure in the schools. So we have one assigned in each of the three high schools in the counties, and then there's Grants Pass High School has as well. And then they also work with the junior highs. But we're trying to actually have an impact before it has to get to the criminal justice system.
Yeah, well, we've got some making up to do because the juvenile justice, as you know, was closed for so long. And the sheriff patrols were down for so long. That's part of the reason we became bad drivers, I think. We saw an opportunity and we took it. Because clearly we are not that good at drivers.
The only cop that had my respect was the one that made me pour my beer out. And didn't give me a ticket.
Well, then I'd see him at, that summer. We'd be picking blackberries because my dad was friends with him.
Yeah.
That was a different Mayberry experience compared to
ours was Bud Whitmire. Bud Whitmire.
Oh, yeah. I remember Bud.
That was my next door neighbor. You know,
yeah. Bud.
For me, it was Russ Brand.
Come on, Danny, let's go home, you know.
They were on Greenwood there, weren't they?
What's that?
On Greenwood off of Bridge Street?
Well, they lived on K Street, 1505 K Street, which our backyard, we were all the way back in Bridge Street. So
I
our
heard
backyard,
you were back. Yeah, okay.
Our backyard's basically joined to an alley.
They had cows on Bridge Street when Dan was a kid.
Yeah.
Still there.
Really?
Yeah, I own,
fence is still
there. I own the house I was born in.
Oh, wow.
70 years later.
Wow.
That's pretty small towny.
Like I said, I'm stuck here.
Right. It's a groove, not a rut.
Well, you know, and then everywhere.
I like that.
When I was in the Navy, I got to see firsthand how it can be a moneymaker. San Diego City Police Department was the only self-funded police department in the whole United States. And I got a ticket there once for, I won't say what it was for, where I had to report. And I pulled up in front of the courthouse and you got out. I was in the Navy at the time. I was going to school and the court was on Friday afternoon. So I was off for the weekend anyway. I lived in Long Beach, but I was going to school in San Diego. And I got out and parked in front and had a parking meter. And it was 50 cents, which was in 1970.
Holy smokes.
That's a lot of money. So you put in two quarters and it goes kink, 1/2 hour. Wouldn't go any farther than a half an hour for 50 cents. So you go in and it's and in the hall room, it's just standing room only. And there's four courtrooms. They're this about four times the size of Rogue Theater each. Mr. DeYoung, you're in courtroom number four. So I give me courtroom number four and I find that. Standing room only. Court is now in session. The lights dim. A screen comes down and it says, it is mandatory to watch this 25-minute traffic safety movie. So there's 25 minutes of my 30 minutes already burn up.
Uh-huh.
Then I get through the thing and I pay my fine and I go out and there's a parking ticket on my window. Everybody all the way around the courthouse in the parking lots or not, the maximum they could have was 1/2 hour and every one of them got a parking ticket.
Ouch. I love it.
Now that's
a racket.
That's thinking outside the box.
Yeah, right.
Yesterday we had a 4-hour meeting in the Athabasca, and all the parking around here is 3 hours. So I contacted the city police on lunch break, and I said, how do we not ticket all these people? Do you need something from me to put on their windshields? Or what? And they just said, the CSO said, well, I haven't started on these lots yet, so they have 3 hours from now. And I'm like, we're good. We'll be done by then. So it worked out. But yeah, that kind of justice thought process of not gotcha. But how do we help the community's mindset as a whole? And I had someone contact me 2 days ago asking, hey, my friend is in a domestic violence situation and has kids, but she failed to appear on a driving suspended and is afraid that she might have warrants. So if she calls for help for the domestic violence and she goes to jail because the warrant, what happens with her kids? And so it was kind of just one of those, I'm like, okay, put my old hat on and the process of things. And I said, well, first off, there's women's crisis to get her help with a restraining order or something like that. There's call the courts. They'll tell you if you have a warrant or the police won't. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you can, and if you have a warrant, you can make an appointment to go in and address the warrant with the courts where the police cannot. So just kind of giving thoughts of how do you help somebody be safe? Mm-hmm. How do you help the children so they're taken care of and thinking through those steps and
still uphold the law.
Absolutely. And not get her a workaround. Deal with your steps. But well, is there any questions you have for us as far as officially in some letters of the law were the county court still in the books?
Yep. Still referenced.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
True.
Right.
And there are county judges. Who are not
there are still
judges.
seven judges still in the county system, mostly in Eastern Oregon.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
We had county judges up until the commissioner system.
Yeah, probably.
Well, we first had our charter's 80. I don't know what was before our current charter, but 67 was when the commissioners kind of started.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. Judges in a court?
We did, but there still are some judges. They serve 6-year terms, just the same as the circuit court judges.
Eastern Oregon.
And but it's kind of interesting because Morrow County most recently switched away from the judge system, and in 2016 was the last election of a judge in Morrow County, and she was elected a judge and started as a commissioner in January. So she has a 6-year term, but it was like, what's your title? And she didn't fit into several kind of categories because she was elected a judge, but they eliminated the judgeship. And a very interesting kind of thing. So Melissa Lindsay in Morrow County was the last elected judge in Morrow County.
Wow.
But never served a day as judge. But we have our Association of Oregon Counties is kind of our lobbying and policy statewide organization.
Okay.
It represents all 36 counties and the 120 commissioners statewide. And so we work together. Hi! Sorry, that's my grandma, my aunt, and my cousin.
I was going to say.
We were talking parole and probation. I thought maybe some of your clients.
No, that's my
family.
That's
at the parade. That's right. That's parade.
That's cool.
They just recently moved to Grants Pass a block away.
Oh, nice.
So, but that's the first time I've seen them walk by in the hallway. So sorry for that moment.
Yesterday it was Pirates. Today it's
That's right. Lily's family, which is scarier. Well, anyhow, they say in the Association of Oregon Counties, if you've seen one Oregon county, you've seen one Oregon county. Because every single one is different. Mm. And we do try to see what we have in common and how we do, but and how the governance is formed and how we process thing, every single county in Oregon is different. And it's interesting. So there's not just a standard way as maybe with state legislators or district attorney's office or different things like that. And,
true.
We certainly want to be at your disposal if ever anything comes up, any policies or different things that as a county that we should be aware of, please let us know. Wally's office is kind of interesting because he's the only elected county legal counsel in Oregon.
Wait, in all of Oregon?
Yes.
Well, almost the United States.
Yeah. There's like one other
in
the
Montana.
Montana,
right?
The
unicorn.
Montana has
the presence of the one. He is the one in Oregon.
The one in Oregon.
Yeah. Not very often.
There had to be one.
We're living rogue down here.
That's right, apparently.
Where's this Wally guy we want to meet?
But, well, you know, our office actually administers the law library with Beecher, of course. And, you know, I made the offer to Judge Thurston as well. But, you know, Judge Hull and some of the other judges have in the past relied on Beecher to do research for them. And want to extend that invitation to you as well.
Excellent.
So, and it's truly, you know, a full package of research that he'll deliver. If you say, I have some arcane question of law and I don't have time to look into it, send it over to Beecher, and it's part of his mandate for me to basically drop everything and take care of what the judge needs.
Quite a resource, thank you.
And, yes, yes.
And okay. if you're and you have something in the next 7 days,
Yeah.
Avoiding telling you, he is the current law lawyer. You're in the presence of the only judge.
They're out of the only
legal counsel and law lawyer.
That's right. You're taking your chances there.
You want to watch him drop everything.
Yeah, right.
Well, I do that. Brag about one stop shopping and Wally's it.
That's right. You're not alone. So yeah, we do that. Yeah, and anyway, but I guess that was the one main point I wanted to make. Was that please do use that resource anytime you need it.
Great, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, there's the lipstick, and so that
not
was
lipstick,
that initial,
which some people say, but lipstick.
Yes, yeah. Lipstick. They always have a judge on that, and so I don't know who's doing it.
Presiding judge.
Presiding judge. Yeah. Okay.
He can appoint somebody else, but traditionally it's always been the presiding judge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so the presiding judge also appoints the legal representative, the defense attorney. So public defender's office. It's Gary.
Oh yeah.
But that position is appointed by. You got to bring her in here.
Yeah. If you've got cuteness,
you
get it in here.
You can't pass up my 2-month brand new cousin.
Look at all that hair. Holy smokes,
I
can see it from here.
Can I show you Walker for a second?
This is my grandma Debbie.
Hi.
My
Debbie.
Hi. My cousin Ezra.
We're Lily's co-workers.
And this is my brand new cousin Zimri.
Oh my goodness.
Hello.
Darren, you're scaring the baby. Come on.
Oh my God.
Well, I know where all my hair went.
That's a lot of hair out of the
game.
That's way cool.
So Debbie is my mom's little sister. So I'm actually her elder by 14 years.
Really old, yeah.
Part of the Morgan.
Oh, baby girl. I'm sorry. I'll put you back.
There's not just a family tree. There's like a forest.
Yeah, there is. There's and it's hooked underneath. The roots are.
Okay, I'm going to pass her back.
No.
Good to see you all.
There ain't nothing like that kind of sound in this room.
I know.
Yep. I like that.
Oh, you'll grow out of that,
Darren. Every day I get a show and tell.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one.
See you guys.
Wow. Nice little family ring.
Yeah. Well, and I was 8, I think, when Debbie married my grandma. She's my step-grandma. But, you know, they were married for almost 30 years, and before my grandpa passed away, or maybe more than that at that point. So at some point, you just say, family's family.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're all I've known. You're
yeah. Right. So they're a blessing. And how often do you get a brand new cousin when you're 43 years old?
It's an American family.
Yes, my first cousin is 43 years younger than me. I'm old enough to be her grandmother.
Oh, wow, yeah, around here.
But
yeah.
Still young enough to play with.
So thank you for sharing that moment with us.
Yep.
Is there anything we can answer questions for you or any thoughts? Or
I'm just curious what you think, like, my relationship would be to the county commissioner's office. Because I'm not the presiding, obviously. And I'm not really sure what other communication we should or shouldn't be having.
Yeah, there's not a lot. Often, I would say hi in the parking lot to any of the judges. And
I'll stay out of your spot.
Did you hear that happen to me?
Did that really happen?
One of the traveling judges kept using my parking spot, and they knew where Trina's spot was, and they said, oh, next to Trina. So she just went this way instead of this way, and I'm like, what do I do? Who is that? And how do I say something?
Have a toad?
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Go over, man. Right.
There
just
have
it. It's the
been,
only way.
There may be projects that come up for collaboration. Mm-hmm. Judge Wilkie had the mental health court policies that he's been trying to advocate at the state level. Mm-hmm. We then go up to the Association of Oregon Counties and then also advocate for those changes with the other commissioners statewide to get their support at the legislature.
That makes a lot of sense.
And so that opportunity, but you know, I said this to Judge Thusen the other day, that as a judge, it's often lonely. And I think at County College, we heard this from the one of the presiding judges from Eastern Oregon that came and talked to us, and one of the justices of the peace, is that neutrality that you have to offer in the community. Mm-hmm. It's different who your friends can be. And I talk about that. It's that way kind of for us too. Friends see you differently when you're elected, and they interact with you. Some do, some don't. Some right. are kind of protected as just friends. But then,
or if you're in a position of power.
Yeah.
Yep.
So my standpoint is we will be respectful. We'll work professionally with, but we'll protect boundaries just the same. But I think that there may be times to work with, but then you guys also make a judgment against us. So it's that balance of mm-hmm. of what you guys ethically are bound to, of that neutrality in your position.
If you're lucky enough to be chosen as a judge for the sheriff's annual chili cook-off, I expect you to be impartial.
I'd only pick the best one, of course.
There you go. Yeah. And you're heavily lobbied at the chili cook-off.
All right. I think that's on the record.
Trust me on that.
Yeah. Okay, I do know under state ethics law, you can receive a gift from one location for only $50. So we do have our new logo stickers.
I love those stickers. And I saw them on a friend's water bottle. She got them at the fair, and I had it gone. I was so jealous.
Well, it's the little things makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any other thoughts on that last question?
You talked about the community kind of having this attitude towards the criminal justice system and kind of feeling alienated, and this might be the natural consequence of the sheriff's department having to pull back for so many years and everyone cutting resources in various ways. And then now, of course, we're intruding in their lives in a different way than they've expected for so many years. Do you think there's anything we could be doing differently inside the court system, or inside the courtroom, really, that could make people feel like this is their law that's getting enforced, that mm-hmm. we're not just, you know, coming from Salem and enforcing this down on their heads, or, you know, pawns of some other government? This is their mm-hmm. government.
There have definitely been, we were asked a lot if the gun confiscation or red flag laws or different things come into play, what mm-hmm. is the due process people will see? I'll give you a case, an example. Today my dad read on Facebook, Grants Pass Public Safety announced they arrested one of their own employees, or one of their employees was arrested, and Douglas County was the investigating agency, and it got all over Facebook. And this morning I looked at him, I said, Dad, she's innocent until proven guilty. So no matter what we've just put out there about her life and what's going on, she hasn't gone through a court system yet, but the entire community just read that she's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
So how does she have justice when we don't know the circumstances. She hasn't had a chance to offer her defense. Mm. And I would say that maintaining that sense of what did the Constitution say? We took oaths to uphold the Constitution, and a lot of that we're dealing with mining laws, where patent laws superseded local land use laws, but people are saying those don't exist because of state law. Well, doesn't constitutionally protected patent laws actually override? So that balance of how do people have a voice when there is a discrepancy between the laws? How is something that is legal in the state but illegal in federal, how do we find that balance?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are several things that are definitely conflicting. I can tell you from my PO hat, one of the things that I saw was that we impose every single fine possible
mm-hmm.
in right. conviction. We have the lowest collection rate in the state.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
And yet other counties, because as a PO, no matter where someone's convicted, I would supervise if they were a resident of Josephine County. So mm-hmm. I saw what other courts did with fines. And we would, every possible assessment fee and fine we impose,
mm-hmm.
other counties don't do that. And so they impose less, and they in turn collect differently. They have higher collection rates than we do. So we impose the most and we collect the least.
So when you say they have higher collection rates, are you talking about like
paying court
fines? How are you equating what's been ordered with what's been collected versus what's been collected up there?
Well, I would see in other counties ways that they would have implementation of how you can pay off those fines. Sometimes you could do classes and have fines waived. They'd have a forgiveness period after a certain amount of time. Or work alternative is allowed in this time. And then in our county, you have 30 days to sign up for a work alternative or you don't have an opportunity to sign up for it. Or if you've ever had it, you don't get that again. So that opportunity to work off your fines.
Are you saying if you've ever worked off your fines in the past, you have no opportunity to do that in the future?
No, if you signed up and you didn't finish it, you lost your chance. And so they've put it was just a pattern of why do we have the highest debt amount in our court system with collection mm-hmm. compared to other counties? Yes, we have a poor community, but when I would also get a judgment order from this county and a judgment order from this county, what's imposed is different as well. So we're imposing more than other counties,
yeah.
And I wonder if that had an impact. But that's not my commissioner hat. That was me just, you asked about in the courtroom, what's something I've seen that's different.
And that's helpful because the more orders we give that everyone kind of goes, yeah, I know that's not going to get followed, the more it undermines the system in general.
Right.
And you don't want to breed that attitude of, I can pick and choose, and the judge isn't really listening or nothing, you know, it doesn't really matter what my situation is, so justice is me choosing what I'm going to do. And
you could put the fourth fine on a transient downtown, but you're not going to get it, ever.
But isn't there something to, okay, fine, we stack up all these fines, that we have John Doe, and he's got 7 different citations, and he chooses to not do any of them. But if you just gave him 1 and he paid it off, and he goes, okay, I'm safe to stay here now. But if you gave him 7 and he's not going to pay it off, then he says, you know, I better get out of here because they're going to catch me eventually. And there's an opportunity for them to say, I go where I'm not under arrest, or I go where they don't know who I am.
I will tell you that since the Supreme Court ruling a few years ago, we cannot jail people for failure to pay fines or fees. So there's no amount of money someone can rack up that will ever land them in jail.
But they do lose their license if they don't pay. And then it's directly linked to, can I get employment if I can't get my license? And
right.
So that was something they were going after in the Longchester 2 years ago, of disconnecting that at the state level as well. Because if somebody is economically less inclined and they have more fines and they can't get their license back versus someone who's got the money to pay for them and can just continue. So they saw it as a disparaging outcome to poor people, that the fees are keeping them from being able to have their license and that lawful process. Just a dialogue. And it's the courts that impose it. And generally the district attorney's office makes the recommendation. And I don't know how those fines actually go back towards what they pay. I just knew that it was my job to help collect them and find those ways to do it. And when you'd see our collection rates compared to programs other counties offered, and we didn't offer any of those forgiveness programs or classes in lieu of, or different stuff like that. If you went and sat in court for 8 hours, you could earn fees off in Multnomah County. if you went and did different things, they would have programs.
That's interesting, because it should be the state who offers those programs if the state is collecting the money from collecting the fines.
Yeah,
yeah.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But county by county, state courts do different programs. Hmm. Yeah. Sorry, sir.
And the pack of dogs that I run with, which you hopefully you'll never see, but the pack of dogs I run with, they say the reason, you know, you say, well, this is what I would do. They say, I wouldn't do that because you have something to lose. The guy that's actually doing wrong, he's never going to see a courtroom because, you know why? He's got nothing to lose. He's got nothing for them to attach. He's got nothing for them. He will never pay the fine. So therefore, they're not going to waste any time on him. But you, however, Mr. Young, you live in a pretty nice house, and you've got a bank account. You know what? We're going to run you up the pole and get you for everything we possibly can, because they know you're not going to throw away the rest of your life on a traffic ticket. Mm-hmm. You're going to do whatever we tell you to do. And I've had friends of mine that felt that's the way it happened. Because I can turn over a drunk that I see him driving down the road all over the place, and he, nothing. But yet, a person that works, it's a head office person at Gold River Distributing gets a drunk driving ticket between on their way home because they stopped and had a couple of beers with mm-hmm. a friend, and boy, that's it. Boy, they ran her up the pole, took away her car, impounded it. By the time she got her car back, there was impound fees, took away her license for a year. You know what I mean? You know, we're going to take away. So there goes. It just completely upended her life mm-hmm. forever, because why? She was gainfully employed and had a bank account. And it really changed her life for 5 to 7 to 10 years. And it never, ever goes away. But you have something to lose. So therefore, that's done more in the field than I think at your level.
It's actually statewide now. State laws regarding DUIs they're the most expensive crime, practically.
Yeah.
And it's meant to be deterrent. I've seen billboards that even say, it costs this much, do you really want it? But in the same hand, I've seen someone who had 17 DUIs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's no consequence mm-hmm. for them because they don't have a license.
Mm-hmm.
The 90-day jail doesn't keep them from, they've gone to prison, come out and got another one how many times? 17 DUI convictions. And
my secretary that I used to have, I said, why? What's up with your husband? And his license was revoked. In other words, you're never going to get it, not suspended, but revoked. You're never to get it again. But yet, I was talking to her one day, and I said, how did you buy a new pickup? How does he go down and buy a brand new pickup? Hmm. I said, you bought it for him, didn't you? And you're insuring it. It's your truck on your insurance, and you're letting your husband drive it revoked. And he runs over and kills 3 people in the car, you know who's going to jail, don't you? You, because you're the responsible person, and admittedly so, because you bought the truck, you insure it, it's licensed in your name, and you let him drive it knowing full well he had a revoked driver's license for multiple DUIs. They finally, he is now in the house of many doors. He is, they caught him finally. I said, how can you not catch that guy? You can sit in my office and watch him drop his wife off at work every day and you're not interested. Well, you know, we can't get anything from him because we've tried that. But he's still driving a revoked. I never was revoked and I was never suspended. The Navy helped me out with that. It's hard to get a traffic ticket when you're 2,000 miles out in the middle of the ocean.
I don't think they do that anymore either. All right. Mr. DeYoung, you are facing this outcome in court, or you can go sign up for the Navy recruiter.
Yeah, it was. It was that Judge Martin suggested that I go somewhere other than here. And I think he meant it. I wrecked a car. When I wrecked a car, everybody thought I was dead. So the car was so smashed up, but I got a traffic ticket while I was in the hospital up here. When they found out I was alive, but the guy had already written out the ticket, and he didn't want to have impose anything on the grieving family. So he wrote me a ticket for doing 107 in a 35, resulting in an accident. And the bail was $15. It was my seventh moving violation in that car in less than a year.
Wow.
How old were you?
Yeah.
16, maybe 17.
Yeah.
That's probably 17. I wrecked it when I just turned 18. Hit a building down here on F Street.
Oh, at least you waited until you're
18. Navy helped you in a lot of ways.
What's that?
I think the Navy helped you in a lot of ways.
Well, I went to Wally Martin. He said, I just went in because you could go in and pay the bail. So I walked in, you know, I hobbled in. I said, yes, I got this traffic ticket, and I'd like to just pay the bail. She said, you don't want to contest it? I said, no, ma'am, I'm just fine. So I put $15 out, and she goes, you.
I went, oh, no. Huh?
And that was down here on 4th Street, 4th and H.
Yep.
You. And I went, me? Yeah, that's me. She goes, judge wants to see you at his chambers. Oh, Lord, he let me have it. But Wally did. He was not nice about it. Mr. Dio.
But she saved your life, or he saved your life.
Man.
And really, he did.
And that's kind of what I was talking about earlier.
More than deal.
I once took part in a release fair up at Oregon State Correctional Institute, where all day we were there at a table for Josephine County, and people that were releasing in different time frames, 3-month increments, would come through out the day. And separately, they had inmate workers that had earned the right to be inmate workers, kind of working alongside of us and helping and serve. Kip Kinkle offered me a cinnamon roll that day. It was kind of, well, that was freaky to be aware that he was there. I called it celebrity inmate, because then I was just curious. I had to look up stuff about the case again just to remind myself. But in those inmate workers I spent the day with, I kept asking how long they'd been there, how old they were when they came, you know, that kind of getting to know them better. I was shocked how many of them were serving over 20-year sentences, if not life sentences, and they were 17, 18 years old when they got convicted. And something about that age group, that an impulsive decision takes the rest of their life away. Mm-hmm. And
but there had to have been something leading up to that.
No, it was just...
Just a one...
They find themselves, and that's... And a lot of it is the machismo of, you insulted me, and now I'm going to assault you, and now I'm in jail the rest of my life. Or something like that, but... More often than not, of the inmate workers I met that day, they were 17 or around that age, and they were serving really big. They did something big, but it's that impulse of that age where, you know, the last thing to develop is your common sense.
And the guy that stole my pickup, he didn't get, he got 20 months, and I you know, was in on the indictment.
I'm not saying their crimes weren't big.
But it wasn't stealing my pickup that he went up the river for. When the sheriff called me, they were at the rest area in Sutherland at 2:00 in the morning. And I says, did you catch the kid? And they said, not yet. He ran off into the night. And I said, so you're gonna let him go? He goes, no, I'm gonna let him run off into the night, get good and hidden. Then I'm gonna send Jake after him. Jake was their dog. He said, we're gonna use this for training purposes, like you hear on the phone. And I said, I can't wait. Yeah. So he says, are you gonna come up and get your truck? And I said, yeah, I will. So Pam and I jumped in the car, went up there, and I said, so, did you catch the kid? He said, yep, we caught him. And I says, is he here? I said, no, we transported him. I said, I was going to offer to give him a ride to the jailhouse in Roseburg. And he goes, I'll bet you would. and he says, how did you know? We haven't even said. How did you know it was a kid? I says, because I saw him over the red ramp on the front of my 357. And he looked down the barrel of it, and then that's when he really decided he'd step up the pace. And he said, well, I'm glad you didn't pull the trigger. And I said, so am I, because I got my pickup back. But it wasn't that. It was when the dog drug him out of the culvert he was in. Mm. Right in front of the cop, he popped the dog, assaulting an officer.
Yeah.
That was it. Cuff him and stuff him. And that was what he really got bad for. You know, I had to go to a grand jury. And it was refreshing, because I told the sheriff deputy, I said, so he'd probably be out tomorrow before I'm home in the wee hours of the morning. He's probably out. He goes, Mr. Dion, you're not in Josephine County anymore. You're in Douglas County. The next ride he's going to take is being a bus with bars in the window to the pen. And can you appear for the grand jury? And I said, yes. Would you sign a complaint? I said, yes. And he says, we'll be in contact. This was on Tuesday, and on Thursday I signed the thing, and on Friday I appeared in Roseburg for a grand jury, and he pleaded guilty, and by the end of next week he was in the pen. That's how fast it worked there.
Wow.
And yet I see some very, very slow on and on.
13
and on.
Appearances or various things.
Yes,
yeah.
and boy, but he pleaded guilty, but probably cut it way back.
Yeah.
Sure.
But they did. I was pretty impressed with the way they did business up there in Douglas County. and very congenial. It was actually a city policeman in Sutherland that came out of a convenience store, got in, got a cup of coffee at 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning, and he saw my truck drive by and he went, "That's a nice looking truck." He said, "I'll bet that's the one from Grants Pass. Just something clicked up here." So he called it into dispatch, and dispatch said, "I have 2 sheriff's deputies going north on I-5 right by you." And he said, "Well, that truck just got on I-5 headed north." Well, the kid pulled off into Sutherland Rest area. The cops pulled off right behind him. He spun around and tried to go back on to the freeway the wrong way.
Direction.
And I think so all dangerous. The damage to my truck was done when they ran him off the road. Because the cop told me, he says, "He's down over the embankment, and your truck's up against the barbed wire fence. It's not wrecked, but it's scratched up." But I think they ran him off the road, and rightfully so. Because he could have really done some bad stuff going the wrong way on I-5.
Well, and that is one thing I should bring up, I guess. So our base tax in Josephine County, when Measure 5 and Measure 50, went into the law, and it kind of put the permanent tax rates into place. Mm-hmm. We were at 58 cents a thousand at the time. And that's how we've been locked in at that rate. It brings in right now just over $4 million.
Okay.
And the jail alone is $6 million, $7 million budget.
Wow, okay.
But we are also, by state law, required to do assessment and clerk and recorder and elections and different other. So there's other functions that we do under county government.
Collect taxes and
the tax collector for all the districts without the ability to be reimbursed or charge a fee for that. So the county essentials that we provide are not covered by our base tax and the 58 cents here and there. So, you know, we were getting 12 to 14 million a year off of ONC harvest, shared harvest throughout the system.
And what is that?
So the ONC Act of 1937 requires the 18 western counties in Oregon, those forest lands operated and managed by BLM, they were set aside as resources to the counties.
Mm-hmm.
Because 68% of our county is federal lands, and so we get a payment in lieu of tax, and we get the shared receipts of those 18 counties. It was a conservation effort. You cut at a sustained yield, a minimum of 500 million board feet a year throughout the 18 counties.
It started clear back when the Oregon-California Railroad came through Oregon.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, they had a huge right-of-way and a swath down through it. Well, it came through all of these counties taking this huge swath, and then the railroad went defunct, so the land went back, reverted back to basically to the federal government. The federal government says, "Well, you know, we'll just anything we cut off of these, we're going to give it to the counties. We'll give them their fair share of harvest." And the harvest was supposed to be, they knew what the yield was, how much it would grow a year, and they said, "We'll go like 70% of that." So it continues to the inventory continues to grow. The interest grows, but the principal, we're going to cut part of the principal. None of the principal, but part of the growth. And so that was all well and good. And then this thing slowly but surely, we don't cut hardly anything on ONC anymore. So therefore, our payments that we get for timber harvest are way, way, way down.
But that provided our basic county functions. Yeah. Because we had a steady revenue from those shared receipts. So when the Endangered Species Act and different outcomes of that and they stopped harvesting, we lost those revenues. They came up with something called Secure Rural Schools, which was kind of a welfare payment system. And each year they've gone down and down and down until they decided not to renew
it. 12 down to?
And we're in the, supposedly $7 million came to our county last year, but half of it goes to schools, and the other portion goes to us. It ended up being $2 million a year, essentially about, I think, for a 2-year period.
And because the federal government owns so much land in our county, that's land we can't charge property tax for, so they have PILT payment in lieu of taxes is another payment.
Which brings over about $1.5 million.
Yes, not a lot.
And that hasn't been consistent either. So the SRS bill expired. They did a 2-year renewal that expired and were asking for it to be renewed, but every time they renew it, it's less than the previous time. Currently, there's no plan of it being renewed. We've been advocating and asking, but it's not there yet. So where we don't have, you know, everyone's like, "Well, why don't you take every penny from all your resources and just put it to Sheriff's Patrol?" But we're still required to provide these other utilities of sorts for the county government. And so funding for sheriff's office, funding for the jail and the juvenile, we're all very pro criminal justice system, but trying to find the balance of and the source of how to pay for it. And it's something we've been dealing with for several years, first when we were at the city and then from the county side, how do we do that? But yeah, it's something that impacts you guys, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and the district attorney's office funding and you know, looking for other sources of funding. And so anytime you hear something from the state level where they're going to impose something back to the counties, we already don't have the money to provide all our services now.
Yeah.
So this year in the long session, they were trying to require every agency that filed a crime, a criminal charge, to have to pay a fee for that filing.
It's like $40 per felony.
With the state?
Yes. The state was trying to impose that.
Huh, I hadn't heard that.
And
It didn't die early, put it that way.
But, you know, it, of course
it
was
the process.
But then they keep saying from the state level, put more on the counties.
That's uh-huh. the takeaway. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are times that we may say, hey, you guys have a network. Realize that anything more on the counties, we're already not able to fund the services because of the land ownership in our counties.
Mm-hmm.
Any more restrictions on what we're able to do means less provided, means less available for other stuff.
Remember you were talking about how we supervise misdemeanors here.
Oh, yes,
and
absolutely.
This is important, but I think Judge Thewson didn't know this until he was brought up the other
so,
day.
Oh, about the way we supervise drug-related misdemeanors?
Oh, well, there's that.
But. Any misdemeanors. So in 1995, you had Senate Bill 1145. And that's when the state got out of parole and they paid the counties to do parole. So county probation, state parole combined, and you have the current community corrections model in the state. Linn County and Douglas County are the only two states that the state runs the parole. Everything else in the state is run by counties.
Huh.
And we do that service for the state. But they only pay the counties for felonies. So there's many counties that have opted out of supervising misdemeanor crimes.
Right. It's optional.
Judge Baker had continued to ask through the supervisory authority and working with community corrections that they would fund misdemeanor crimes. And when I was hired as
That was part of the compromise in enacting the new legislation. No.
Not at all. Matter of fact, Jackson County does not supervise misdemeanors. Many counties don't. And so we would deal with somebody getting convicted here and being ordered to misdemeanor probation.
Uh-huh.
And they live in another county.
Jackson County transfer it and there's none.
And it gets sent to bench.
Yeah.
And so every county is different. In our county, it is something the county gifts to the courts.
So you're not getting paid at all?
At all for misdemeanor crimes. And we could at some point say we won't. But we have up till this point said as common good, as mm-hmm. goodwill. But there's $0 from the county going to community corrections. It's entirely paid through the state funds, which only fund felonies. So therefore, there's no funding for that. But it's something that we realize is part of being a part of the system,
mm-hmm.
that partnership. So that's something that just to be aware of, there's no funding for the misdemeanors, but we do offer it. And other counties do not necessarily, but we're still trying to be a ball player.
Hmm. So what happens to those misdemeanor supervision people? Do they just get put on reduced supervision?
They get put on bench. So if something else comes up, the judge can impose something, you know, through a warrant. But as you know, misdemeanor warrants in Oregon, some are only imposed in the counties they're mm-hmm. issued. They're not serviceable out of the state, so people can easily get away with not.
Well, and wait a minute.
They
you
are
can get impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors.
All right.
You can get impeached for misdemeanors, and yet we have people sitting on the bench all day with no
for
the hand slap.
But they are still.
I don't get that. How does that work out?
RSU, just not at the same level. Oh, yeah, the reduced supervision unit. Yeah, but they are still supervised.
Figure it out.
Yeah. Well, it depends on their risk levels and different stuff. So,
oh, right, yeah.
But you can have someone who's had a slew of felonies and one misdemeanor, and these all expire off because of early blah, 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 but the misdemeanor doesn't, so then they're just left on misdemeanor supervision. And,
oh, I didn't even think about that.
Right? Yeah. So it's real.
When I was first hired in 2005, at that time, there was $1 million from the general fund that went to community corrections. And that went away about a year or so later. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was getting laid off because there wasn't funding for my job. Somehow I didn't get laid off and worked there 11 years. But along the way, I remember a conversation where I met with Judge Baker about asking us to put in a tier of supervision for another crime, a misdemeanor level crime. And Abe Huntley and I met with her, and you did at one point too. We just negotiating mm-hmm. that we would offer that service even though we're not paid for it. That cover that?
I think it did.
Awesome. Well, any other questions for us, or
not at this moment? Giving me a lot to think about, though.
Welcome.
Thank you guys for your time.
Yeah,
it's quite a mountain of issues you are struggling with here.
We'll wait back you in the parking lot.
I will do it just to keep your morale up.
One other thing that I would like to let you know is I was specifically told from Representative Dwayne Stark that had the levy that we pushed for the jail and juvenile detention not passed, we would not have got our fifth judgeship.
Really?
Correct. They said, because he was on the Ways and Means, the Judicial Ways and Means at the time, and he said specifically the state was watching to see what we would do if that levy passed, because it showed that we as a community were taking action and taking responsibility for service, and because of it, we got our fifth judgeship. Hmm. Without that, we would not have.
That's incredible, because we just squeaked past. I mean,
it was 52, 53.
It was a lot of work.
Like
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's, yeah.
Oh, we'll get another chance at it soon.
Yeah. But it was a direct correlation of something the county did that had an impact on something you guys had requested since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And Dwayne Stark had said that he was specifically told by the governor's office that we would not have got that had it not been.
We're also looking outside the box for different ways, different out of there, off the norm, off the radar for most people. Quite highly contentious, but I don't mind getting beat up every day about it. We're trying to find different avenue of funding, so that when instead of saying, well, we have one retired Josephine County Sheriff's posse up there to help you out in courtrooms, that we would love to have a person in every courtroom for your safety. But a lot of times some of our neighbors don't wish to be good neighbors because they just say they don't need it, so therefore, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of this hinges on what Jackson County does, because certain things that we want to pass, if they, you know, we want to take it to the voter, we don't want to pass it, we want the voter to pass it. Seem like pretty good, you know, pretty good proposals. But if it doesn't work, if Jackson doesn't get along, and Jackson recently has decided that they don't want to be a good neighbor on a number of different fronts for some reason, and I don't know why. I don't know what their thing is over there. I plan to have a good heart-to-heart with Mr. Strasser and find out what makes them tick.
Well, that is one other area for you that I should point out, is that we are not also fully reimbursed with court security costs for what the need is compared to what the reimbursement is of the state, and that's statewide. Lane County, that's a big one they bring up frequently at our association. So we advocate for the state to fully fund mm-hmm. that provision. So
well,
they require the county to provide it, but they don't fund it for a state function. So this is our partnership again, that it's a county service being mandated to provide,
mm-hmm.
but not being able to provide the funding for it, yes.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, if you think about it, this is one of the few places people have to go to. They get that jury summons, they get summoned to court, I mean, they're a defendant, they're a plaintiff, they have to come to this building, and this building has to be secure. And so it's incumbent on people here gathered to make sure that happens, and it's not something we can take for granted.
Right.
So, yeah.
True.
That's scary.
Well, thank you very, very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you all for taking time from your day, especially on a Friday.
Yeah.
Have a
should be
as
14 cases on Friday, but nobody.
Yeah, right.
I'll come back.
We'll
just do
it.
They'll
be back next week. Don't worry.
Let's continue.
I had one thing unrelated for you guys. I just saw two guys walk by that one of you might have an appointment with, and the folks that I talked about referring to mining advisory. I got the application from forestry that there's a legal methodology, the ordinances, and the application that we can refer
that was already available
to forestry for that process. So whoever's meeting, there you go.
Not me.
All right.
Wasn't me either.
Fun so stuff. Oh, weird. Okay.
You
never
just
mind.
Touch your nose. Is that how this
not
is?
Not me.
They must be going to see Wally.
They could be.
All of a sudden, Wally's a law librarian.
Yeah.
I don't know what to talk about. I'm law librarian.
Yeah, exactly.
I reached out to find out what the path was and got an answer and was given paperwork. So
glad to hear it.
Cool.
Truly, if there's anything we can do, holler.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you guys. Yeah.
Or just
really
stop by and
this.
Say hello.
Yeah.
We're
on the way to everywhere.
Trip down the stairs.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not far away.
Mm-hmm. I'll put your name in the hat with the chair for the chili cook-off.
Oh, yes. I love homemade chilis.
Well, they got some pretty hot stuff there.
I watched one of the officers take an expired OC spray. And
oh, goodness.
No. Oh. Donnie Schmidt from City.
Well, it's
not,
still
he's
FDA.
Not there anymore.
Yeah, well, that's
still
FDA.
Yeah. He's not there anymore. This was years ago.
Never mind. No, we've got it. We don't employ any weapons against our judges now.
All right.
We're adjourned at 2:35.